welcome to the latest episode of the Leave Cheap podcast. Lucy, thank you for joining me. It's great to have you here. So for those of you that are listening and don't know Lucy Cole, Lucy, you're a final year law student at the University of Exeter. You're a future trainee at Magic Circle firm Clifford Chance. You're the co-president of Exeter Law Society, and you're also a highly successful Instagram influencer, also known as Lucy Does Law. So you've been busy, to say the least. Fantastic achievements. But before we get into all of that, I'd like to go back to the beginning and open with a very simple but important question, which is, when did you realise you wanted to become a lawyer?
Great question. I think I've always known I've wanted to become a lawyer, but for very different reasons, kind of throughout my journey into law. It mainly came from when I was younger, involved in a lot of drama and a lot of acting and a lot of performance. I loved it. I loved performing on stage and I loved talking to people. And I kind of thought, okay, I'd like to be an actress, but it didn't quite tick all of the boxes, even though in the back of my head, I'm thinking maybe acting would have been fun. But I actually got involved in kind of courtroom drama stuff. And I loved researching into a case and then arguing for a client. Like, I just loved arguing, basically. So kind of from that moment onwards, I got some work experience just at a high street firm in family law. I really enjoyed how kind of personable it was with clients. I thought, yeah, this is really, really great. So I went to uni, did my law degree. Always wanted to be a family lawyer, kind of from the start of my time in Exeter. I was convinced family law was the one for me. And then I went to a couple of networking evenings with some big kind of commercial firms and suddenly thought, the law life that I want is actually here, not in family law. So I kind of thought, okay, commercial law, let's explore what this is like. Did a few placements, one in-house, one in private practice. Absolutely loved it. I guess the research side and just also how law is so applicable to absolutely everything, and I really enjoyed kind of the way language is used and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, led to my big passion, I guess, for going into law.
And do you ever think, maybe I could go back to acting, maybe there's a career in Hollywood waiting for me?
Maybe not Hollywood, no. I think acting is something I could do in my spare time and doing the holidays a lot. Maybe in the future I'd get more involved with kind of media and kind of that area. But I think for now, acting is definitely in the background and it's law focus from now onwards.
Yeah. I mean, they're both very competitive. Being an actor to make it big is, you know, also very as competitive almost as getting a training contract. You've, as mentioned, you've secured a training contract to Clifford Chance, which we'll touch upon later. So you joined Exeter in 2018, is that right? And at what point did you think to yourself, I want to start a blog designed to share the law student experience with the masses?
Yeah, so that's really interesting. So I think when I first joined uni, I had no idea what the legal career actually was like and how to get into it. I kind of thought you got your law degree and then you became a lawyer. I didn't even know the LPC was a thing. So it was a huge culture shock when I started at uni, and like within my first couple of weeks, I was networking with, you know, Magic Circle firms. And I was like, what am I actually doing? Like, what is this world that I had no idea existed when I was in sixth form? So I actually started my blog in October of that year, but I deleted it in December. Bad mistake. I think I built up like 1,000 followers and then deleted it because I'm not sure. I think the pressure got too much of kind of putting myself out there quite early on. Then I restarted it in April 2019, mainly as procrastination from my first year exams. I didn't really think anyone would be that interested because the whole legal Instagram thing wasn't a thing really back then. There weren't many people kind of putting themselves out there on Instagram doing law. So I just kind of put out content about studying, what was helping me with my exams, and kind of my thoughts on university at the time. It was really to act as a support network for people who were like me and just couldn't believe how much reading there was in the degree, you know, how the career hits you so early on. So I restarted it and stuck with it until now, and I'm absolutely loving it.
And that feeling of that culture shock, do you feel like at the time it was just you, or do you think friends around you also had the similar culture shock?
I think friends around me definitely had the culture shock as well. I mean, there were a few people who had taken gap years and were a bit more kind of clued up on what the law career entailed. But I think the majority of freshers, particularly in my kind of intake into uni, were like, wow, this is insane. You know, you get introduced to the Law Society and everyone in the years above you seems to know exactly what they're doing, and you're having to adapt to a new university environment, a new way of learning of your degree, and suddenly everyone's like, oh, if you want to be a lawyer, you have to like apply for your jobs now. And I was just like, where is this all come from? Why did I not know about this? So yeah, I feel like a lot of people were in the same boat as me.
You mentioned that you deleted your Instagram account with 1,000 followers, which is huge. I mean, it's like, it's obviously it's not as much as you have now, but you know, you gain 1,000 followers pretty quickly. So just walk me through like the decision to delete and walk away from Lucy Does Law the first time.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think firstly, I was only in my first year, so I wasn't actually maybe as clued up on the career as I thought I was. So partly the pressure from that was probably an aspect in it. But I think in terms of blogging, and I've definitely got a different mindset to it now, it became a real strain to like take a photo every time I was studying and come up with a caption and post that. And to kind of grow an account, you have to focus on interacting with a lot of other accounts as well and kind of networking in that way. And to have to be doing all of that as well as trying to settle into uni and still get to grips with the degree was probably just all a bit much at once. I think I had to kind of find my feet in Exeter first before I actually, you know, wanted to commit fully to doing the blog.
In a post on Instagram that announced your return, as Lucy Does Law, you said that you weren't going to worry about the numbers, you were just going to do it for yourself. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of, when they start these Instagram accounts, and they get a lot of questions about this, kind of like, how do I grow my following? How do I grow my following? And I think if you get so sucked into those numbers, you forget why you started the account in the first place. So I do not care how many people are following me on Instagram, and like I appreciate every single one who does. I, you know, I'm not putting them down or anything like that, but I just think there's a reason why I started the account. If people want to follow it and they want to get involved, they can. But I don't mind how many people are there. You know, if one person takes something away, that's absolutely brilliant. And I think that shift in mindset is a really healthy way to kind of deal with social media and the pressures that can come with that.
You mentioned that other influencers come up to you how to grow your following. So do you think that number watching is still a kind of issue which is happening within social media?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think, you know, there are always milestones you want to achieve. So, you know, although I don't watch the numbers, if once you hit kind of like 10,000 followers on Instagram, you can do swipe up links on your stories. And that's like a really cool feature. So you kind of want to aim for that milestone so you can do something else with your account. And I understand with like a smaller number of followers that you want to reach more people and get involved in more brands, because the bigger reach you have, the more likely you are to kind of collaborate with other people and stuff like that. And it gets really exciting. So I understand the number game, but I just think you've got to be so careful that you're not pressurizing yourself all the time and like refreshing and refreshing, like, oh, can I get another 100? Can I get another 100? I think it's to do with pressures. And I think if you can take as much pressure off you as possible, then that's brilliant.
In the earlier days of study gramming, did you find that there was a kind of a pressure to look like you're always studying and always grinding away? But more recently, there is more of a shift away from that, and there's more of a reminder amongst influencers to not believe everything they see on social media, to take it with a pinch of salt. And also, I've seen a lot of influencers trying to normalize rejection and be open and authentic about the challenges about being a law student. Would you say you've seen this?
Yeah, there's definitely been a shift. I think for me personally, you know, I never really documented anything to do with my career until I had secured vacation schemes. So that was always really important for me, that the content I was putting out was something based on my own experience. And I wasn't about to put out content on how to write a good application or how to get into law when I hadn't secured anything myself. So for a very long time, my account was literally just photos of me studying, because that's what I was doing and that's what I knew. So in terms of like the pressures, I think it depends, because I always definitely show whenever I have down days or whenever I'm kind of spending the day kind of working from my bed or, you know, not studying. And I think that's really important. But I think on the flip side of that, kind of law Instagram accounts and study accounts, the reason why people follow them is for motivation. So the more and more you put out content like, oh, I'm not doing much work, or, you know, I'm getting bad marks here and there, I guess it depends on your follower base, but I know my followers follow me for motivation. So also it is important for me to say, you know what, I've had a really good study day today. I worked for 8 hours. I fully believe you can do this too. Here's what's really helped me. And I think that's really good as well. So I feel like it's up to you as the consumer to decide how you want to take in that information. You can decide whether you want to be pressured by that or whether you don't want to be. But I definitely shift to normalizing kind of days when you're not productive and days where you might face rejection is definitely so important, because everyone's human, nobody is productive all the time. So definitely giving kind of the well-rounded view is definitely important.
If I look back at when you first started Lucy Does Law, I mean, I actually recall writing a piece for Legal Cheek, which was called, which was titled Meet the Instagrammers, Making Law Revision Look Glam. And it featured one of your earlier posts, which, you know, had you with it, like a glamorous study setup, you know, complete with like banana and peanut butter snacks, which looked really delicious. And if you scroll down your page, many of your posts at the beginning were of your study notes, your textbooks. But if you look at more your recent entries, they're more pictures kind of you, the more vloggy style posts, sort of you talking to the camera. Was this shift intentional, moving away from just posts with your notes to speaking more directly to the camera?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I didn't show my face on my law account for absolutely ages. And then I kind of realized the more I was interacting with people, I was like, they don't know who I am. They don't know what I look like. And they're commenting on my post, like, this is really great to hear, and reacting to my stories, but they have no idea who I am. So I think it was a conscious effort to start putting my face out there more. In terms of the shift from my content then and now, I think my career development has played a huge part in that, because a lot of the content I post is how I kind of got to my training contract, but I wouldn't have started posting that content unless I had. So that's kind of where I've seen a shift, and it's hard to take a flat lay of, you know, some notes and say, here's how you get into a law firm, because the photo is not relevant to the caption. So I think there was kind of a natural change there. But yes, I think it was a conscious decision to actually say, okay, this is a great network. Why don't they know who I am? I'm actually going to start putting my face out there more so I can connect with these people in a better capacity.
If I didn't know who you were and I looked at your Instagram page and I looked at your blog and also looked at your, the kind of vlog video style reels that you do and for Instagram TV, I think, wow, this person, not only she's a law student, but, you know, she's almost, you know, it's very, it looks very professional. But I'm guessing there was a point when you didn't know how to do any of that. You had to learn completely from scratch. Am I right in thinking you had to build your website from scratch, and also you had to learn how to take pictures of notes in a very aesthetically pleasing way? So yeah. Talk me through this kind of like learning process for you.
Absolutely, yeah. Everything I've done from scratch. I've never had any help from anyone else. So whether that's, you know, doing thumbnails, video editing, all that kind of stuff, no one has ever said, this is how you do it. It's always been kind of trial and error. And I think that's a huge part of it. It's just kind of giving it a go. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does, it does. And I think I've actually really enjoyed the creative side of things. I mean, it's only within the last probably 9 months that I've started creating videos, firstly for IGTV and now YouTube. And I actually love the editing process. I almost enjoy it more than I do actually filming. I think it's so fun to get creative. And like I said, I kind of came into law through a drama background. So it's been really nice to apply that creativity into something to do with law and something to do with my platform. So I think if you're kind of, thinking of starting a blog, my biggest advice is just to kind of give things a go. Like if they go wrong, they go wrong. It doesn't really matter. At least you're trying and you're learning. And I think that's something really exciting.
You've now moved onto YouTube as well. Was building a YouTube audience always part of your long-term social media plan?
No, I don't think building an audience has ever been part of my long-term plan, which might sound surprising, but I would never kind of brand myself as an influencer and or anything like that. I don't kind of fit myself into that bubble. Kind of, I'm just me and I'm just putting out content that I personally would enjoy watching. And if people also enjoy that, then that's great. But kind of YouTube was never part of the long-term plan. It was only recently that I thought, okay, in terms of accessibility, YouTube is a lot easier to consume things on. And if you're hard of hearing as well, YouTube actually provides automated captions, which IGTV wasn't doing at the time I was uploading. I think that's changed now and you can have captions on there, but I do have followers who are hard of hearing. So I make sure I subtitle like all the stories I put out there, and YouTube kind of does that automatically as well. So in that way, it was more accessible. And also like I said, it's kind of based on what I enjoy watching. I love at the end of the day, kind of watching someone's day in the life or watching a video on something on YouTube because it's a bigger screen, it's easier to watch. So I kind of questioned why I wasn't doing that content anyway. So YouTube just happened.
Do you find it's a kind of different ball game to Instagram? You know, you're very comfortable with Instagram. You've got a lot of followers, but with YouTube, is it just like the algorithms are different, the whole process is different. How's your experience of that so far?
Yeah, I think I'm still trying to work YouTube out. I don't think I've nailed it at all. I mean, some videos do really well. So like my What's in Glazer video has, I know for a fact that one has a lot of views, but that's a hot topic at the time. So yeah, I think they are different, very different platforms, and I haven't cracked the YouTube algorithm at all. But we'll see in the future. I do enjoy editing YouTube videos. I find them really fun, and the platform's really easy to use as well. But I guess in comparison to IGTVs, the biggest change I've had is IGTVs, I always filmed portrait, YouTube videos, a landscape. Yeah. So it actually changes the way your face looks as well, which is kind of weird into the editing process. But I would say that's been the biggest change. Like I said, I don't really mind about numbers that much. So the whole algorithm cracking thing, I haven't given it that much thought, but maybe I will in the future.
You've got a huge amount of followers. I mean, that's a lot of people to let into your life, especially when there's already so much pressure on law students. As that number of subscribers grows, does anything change for you? I mean, are there parts of your life that you have to keep separate?
I wouldn't say anything would change if I got more followers. I think my account has always just been me. And I think particularly now more than ever, I share a lot and it's very authentic and kind of that's what it is. I kind of see everyone following me as just a collection of friends that I'm just chatting to. And that's how my account works. And I would never want to change that. In terms of anything I keep off camera, that's a good question because I never consciously don't put things on Instagram or on YouTube, but I guess there are some things that naturally, you know, if I wouldn't tell like an acquaintance about, I'm unlikely to maybe put it on Instagram. But it depends. I've never really given that much thought. I think it just comes naturally. There are just some things that I'd keep off camera, but to be fair, the majority of my life is visible on Instagram and YouTube. There isn't really much that I hold back. If people ask me questions, I'll always answer them honestly. So I'll never really like deliberately hide something online, I don't think.
So you don't have like a personal account and then the Lucy Does Law account. You just have the one.
Oh, I do have a personal account that I had before Lucy Does Law, but it's very inactive because everything goes on Lucy Does Law. So there's not much different there at all.
And as you've grown, you've developed more partnerships with law firms and you've also gained more paid for opportunities. You yourself as becoming a brand, and you mentioned you're not really cautious about what you post. Because there's nothing you're kind of holding back. But you do hear about these influences that do get dropped by brands or kind of fall out the public favor. Does that ever play in your mind that you could slip up?
It's never really crossed my mind. Maybe that's a bad thing. But no, I think if I'm working with a brand, I want them to know exactly who I am. And if they won't take me as who I am, then I don't want to work with them, frankly. You know, I think that's really important, just to remain yourself, remain authentic. And people are human. If I make a mistake, I make a mistake. But at the moment, things have gone okay, and I hope they continue that way.
You've also previously mentioned on your stories that you get strange messages as an influencer, almost like kind of creepy messages. Mm-hmm. Could you provide some examples of the kind of messages you've received?
God, I mean, probably the majority of them I just don't really want to go into, but you do get strange messages certainly from people kind of asking requests from you, kind of, I guess, objectifying women is quite an issue on social media, which is quite common on Instagram and LinkedIn. I mean, I posted about it once and I was shocked by the amount of responses I received from people saying I've experienced really similar problems. So yeah, you do get strange messages, but you know, the block feature is a thing. I just block and delete. I don't really let it affect me that much. A lot of those accounts also had a substantial number of followers, so I think that kind of just realistically the people who are getting in touch are spam accounts who are likely copy and pasting the same messages to a lot of people, so I think that's kind of where the commonality comes in.
How have you marketed the skills you've picked up as an influencer in your applications?
Yeah, great question. I also get asked this a lot, and really I didn't mention it that much in my applications. I spoke way more about other experiences I had in law or outside law as well. The whole blog thing, when I was applying to law firms, my blog was just about studying because that's what I knew and that's what I could share advice on. So it wasn't really in a law firm application to say that I was taking photos of my notes and providing study tips wasn't really a good enough reason, I felt, for me to justify kind of applying to a law firm and wanting to work in law. I think in terms of talking about the blog, where it came kind of helpful was more in the interview process, I guess talking about innovation and doing something new, because at the time it was prior to the kind of influx of legal accounts that happened in 2020. So it was really new and it was something exciting to talk about. But I mainly spoke about how the blog allowed me to connect with other people. So quite early on into blogging, I was partnering with, you know, other legal organizations, just providing content for them. And I could kind of talk about how, and I was charging for that content, so I could talk about how I'd learned some basic business skills from that and how, you know, that was quite innovative in itself. So I guess that's where the blog came into it, but I would never say it was a huge feature of any of my applications.
Talking to the camera though, does it help you become more confident in communicating? Is that a skill which you've picked up?
I think it's definitely one I've developed for sure. Like I said, I was always into acting and performance. So kind of talking to people has always come quite naturally to me, or it's something that I've developed over a long period of time. So kind of, I guess, getting involved with blogging and filming just kind of built upon those skills in a different way.
As you mentioned, there's a huge influx of kind of new accounts on Instagram, each documenting their experience as a law student, you know, with various names, legally this, legally that. So do you see yourself as a trendsetter, or do you feel as though you too had your kind of legal influencer idols, which you looked up to?
I would never say I was a trendsetter. Absolutely no way. Yes, like there are definitely accounts that I am inspired by and that I really enjoy, you know, taking in content from. I think it's absolutely incredible that there are so many of them, because, you know, LinkedIn is this very professional network. And then suddenly Instagram, for law people specifically, I haven't seen it as strongly in like accountancy or, you know, engineering or any of those professions. But for law, you know, law students have somehow found this way to create this network that's very kind of relatable, very chatty, very consumable. And I think that's amazing. And I love being part of it. And I love being inspired by other people, you know, no matter how many followers they have, whether it's like 50 or, you know, 50,000, I absolutely love kind of learning from other people and talking to other people who are very like-minded. I think it's brilliant.
You said that you met a lot of people through Lucy Does Law. Is there like a secret influencer kind of community? Is there like a WhatsApp group that we don't know about? Do you all hang out? You know, is there like a Zoom party that you guys have all together?
No, I mean, not that I'm involved with anyway. I think a lot of this law influencer stuff hit hard, like over lockdown. So realistically, there haven't been any opportunities for that kind of, I don't know, like getting together to develop, I guess. But there are definitely people who, you know, I've got their numbers and we talk, you know, we FaceTime every now and then and like have a good catch up. So there are definitely people that I've connected with outside of law and I would now definitely class as a friend, and that's amazing. And I'm sure kind of once COVID has lifted, there are so many people who we keep saying to each other, oh, we'll have to meet up for coffee when we can. And that's amazing. But there's no secret huge WhatsApp convention group thing going on that I'm part of for sure.
I think if anybody were to look at your LinkedIn, you know, they would, as I did before we just spoke, you know, the question I think they want to know the answer to is how you fit it all in. Because let me just read some of the things that you've done and you're currently doing. You're currently the co-president of the Exeter Law Society. You applied for and secured VAT schemes at two Magic Circle firms, Clifford Chance and Slaughter & May. And obviously you've accepted a training contract at Clifford Chance. You secured work placements at several other law firms. You were the publicity officer for the Exeter Legal Hacker Society, which you helped set up from scratch. You are currently the head of communications at Grow Mentoring. You achieved first in your first and second year studying law, and you've also been involved in the Debating Society and the Bodybuilding Society. So what's a secret? Come on. That's so much. That's how do you fit it all in?
Also, just to clarify, it's like it's the body society, not bodybuilding.
I'm oh, really? Okay.
It's a lot more chilled than that. But how do I do it all? That's a great question. I mean, not all of those things were done in the space of a year or, you know, concurrently at the same time. So it can sound like a lot, but that's, you know, you've just given an overview of maybe 2 years of experiences. But I am doing a lot at the moment, and I think for me, kind of fitting it all in, it just happens naturally because I enjoy absolutely everything I do. And for me, I kind of thrive off being busy. If I've only got one thing going on, the chances of it getting done are very, very slim, because I kind of think, oh, I've got ages and ages to do this. Whereas if I'm juggling, you know, five different things at the same time, it keeps me motivated because I know I have to finish something so I can get on and do the next task I have to do for a different project. And, you know, that kind of just keeps me going and keeps me motivated. I guess fitting it all in, I do actually have a social life as well. I just want to declare, because it can sound like, oh my gosh, you probably work, you know, 24 hours a day and never see people. I have a really great social life, which is also brilliant, I can fit that all in. I think, you know, I love mornings. I love utilizing the time where I know I'm productive. I know if I get up early and get stuff done, it gets done. I always flag in the afternoon, so I never leave important things to get done then. But I guess it's finding, in terms of fitting it all in, it's finding things you're genuinely interested in, and the time just happens by itself. I think if you're interested in what you're doing and you've got ambition, you get it done. It's not a question of kind of trying to fit it all in. Like, there's always time. It's just whether you actually want to dedicate the time to what you're doing.
On your blog, you mentioned one of your kind of secret tips is Google Calendars. Do you swear by it?
Oh my gosh, I swear by apps. Like Google Calendar, that has my whole life on it. Like, if I could send my friends kind of like a calendar invite to go out for a coffee with me, I would. Like, if it's not in the Google Calendar, it's not happening. So yeah, Google Calendar, I absolutely swear by it. It's where my whole life is stored.
Yeah, no, because I use calendars for work as well. And what I like is that you can color code things. Mm-hmm. That's like, you can make your calendar pretty aesthetically pleasing. So yeah, you know, I would recommend to our listeners. And you also mentioned on your blog that you set three main priorities and everything that fits around them, I can say no to if I don't have the time or energy. What would you say are your three main priorities?
Ooh, I do have them, but I don't think I'd share them on the podcast.
Ah, okay.
but like, not that they're a big deal, just because I think they're kind of not personal, but I would feel if something wasn't in that priority and someone kind of found that out and then asked me to do something, or maybe they'd feel guilty asking me to do something that wasn't classed as a priority. So I wouldn't necessarily put them out there, but I think for me, it's just useful. And, you know, I'm the kind of person that loves saying yes to things. I love getting involved in new opportunities, but you can get involved in too much. And I think, you know, the worst case scenario is saying yes to so many things, but then doing, you know, a not so satisfactory job at them because you're doing too much. And I'd rather concentrate on doing, you know, fewer things that I know I can do really, really well. So being able to have three priorities just kind of lessens the guilt if I have to say no to any opportunities.
The idea of prioritizing is important, I guess, because things which matter and are important, like your studies, can that they can be harmed by saying yes to everything. Did you have to learn that the hard way, or have you always been very good at prioritizing?
Yeah, I think I did. I would say Christmas of 2019, kind of going into 2020, I burnt out so badly. You know, I had been really going all guns blazing during the first term of my second year at uni, applying to firms, trying to do really well in my degree, being on a committee position. I then, you know, came home and I worked full time during the holidays running a drama course. And I took one day off before Christmas and I got so ill. I actually developed tonsillitis. Wow. On the day before Christmas Eve, I had to go to the doctors, get antibiotics. I couldn't eat anything on Christmas Day. You know, missed out on all the best things about Christmas because I'd literally just overdone it throughout the term. And I think my parents had said to me all the time, stop, take a break, take a break. And I was just like, no, I love everything I'm doing. But even though I was loving it, it wasn't good for me. And I think, yeah, I definitely learned that the hard way. But since then, I've hardly burnt out at all. In fact, I would say I haven't. I really did learn from that experience, and I take regular breaks all the time. I always try and take the weekends off. I think that's so healthy. So definitely learned it the hard way, but since then it's all been pretty smooth, which is good.
Looking ahead, what would you say that's next for you? Do you plan on influencing throughout your LPC, the training contracts, and right up to partnership, if that ever happened?
I mean, absolutely. I think if I can document, you know, anything I'm doing to do with law, I will. And, you know, I don't see an end point at the moment for Lucy Does Law. So yes, if I can continue it, and then I will, obviously, you know, once you start at a law firm, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to talk about. Obviously, confidentiality is absolutely huge. So I don't know what kind of content I'll be able to put out, but I'm hoping I can still put out something valuable for law students. And, you know, I love talking to people. I love connecting. I love sharing things. So whatever I can, I would really love to.
If someone's to look at your success, I mean, I guess for them, they could look at your success and they may think, well, if she can do it, so can I. But I'm guessing you'll tell me that it's actually not that easy and it does require like a real grind. So what do you think has been the hardest part of it all? And what do you think has been the most rewarding thing about it?
I think the hardest part for me in terms of my journey into law were the applications in the first place. I think, I guess the hardest part for me is I never believed that I could get to the position that I am in now. So I had a lot of self-doubt applying to law firms, interviewing at law firms, going on to my vacation schemes. And, you know, I was convinced I was not going to get a training contract in my second year. Absolutely. I thought there's absolutely no way I would ever get hired, let alone by a magic circle law firm. You know, I never had an intention that I specifically dreamt of working in a magic circle firm because I didn't believe it would ever happen. So I think for me, that was the hardest part. And it is still a challenge I'm trying to overcome. But getting the offer phone call probably is the most rewarding thing. I mean, I literally said to grad recruitment when they gave me my offer, I was like, well, what happens if you change your mind? What do I do then? And they were like, Lucy, like, why are you worrying? It's fine. So I think that's probably the hardest thing it's been for me. And also, it is most rewarding because I've learned so much about myself throughout the process. And it's really nice when hard work pays off.
And finally, to those thinking of setting up a law-themed Instagram account or a law-themed blog or YouTube channel or even a law-themed TikTok, what would your advice be to them?
I would say I have two pieces of advice. My first one would be think about why you're creating it and make sure you understand your personal brand and why that's different to all the other accounts that are out there now. I mean, there are thousands. So think about why you're unique and kind of what you're trying to show on your account. Secondly, just enjoy it. I think don't overthink, you know, too much the content you're putting out there. Don't pressurize yourself. Just enjoy kind of interacting and creating a community because that's been what I've enjoyed the most from it. So yeah, just enjoy it.
Brilliant. Well, Lucy, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Legal Cheek podcast. And I wish you all the best in your final year. And I wish you all the best in your legal career ahead.
Thank you so much.